Welcome to the How I Scaled Service podcast. I'm Caitlin Stremple, founder and CEO of Rising Ranks Digital. We help service-based businesses get to the top of their industry by getting found online. We believe that you have a message that someone needs to hear, and that message can impact the world. Are you interested in becoming our next podcast guest? Stick around to the end and we'll tell you how you can do just that. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to How I Scale Service Podcast. I'm your host, Genesis Amaris-Kemp, and today we'll be chatting with Armon Kroom. Hopefully I said your name correctly, but he will do us the honor by introducing who he is, telling us the name of his business and how he got started. Welcome.
What's going on? How you doing?
Doing well. Let's start off by telling the listeners who you are, the name of your business, and what led you to join the industry you're in now.
All right. Well, obviously, my name, she did say my name right, Armon Kroom. I am the CEO or CEO of Kroom Financial. I also run a blog called The Financial Effect. And I'm basically a financial advisor. I help people make smart choices with their money. Now, how I got into this business is kind of a weird story. Well, not weird, but I started off in the Navy. I graduated from Tulane University in a finance degree, and I started off in the Navy, and I don't like working for people. The one thing the Navy did teach me is I do not like working for other people. So I got out of the Navy after 4 years, 4 months and 11 days. Trust me, I would do it again. I would do it again. I really would. However, I learned a lot of lessons about me and how I didn't belong. And so I was looking for something that I could kind of do on my own and, you know, be my own boss. And since I had got a degree in finance, I was like, let's try being a financial advisor. So I kind of, you know, met someone who was already in the industry, found a mentor, and kind of got led into this thing. And it's a long story, but it ended up being a success.
Nice. But it's so funny how you said you were in the Navy, you got out, and you knew the exact amount of time that you were in the Navy. You're like 4 years, 4 months, 4 months, and what, 11 days?
11 days, yes,
ma'am. I said day to the T. So, okay, everyone knows whenever you're in business, everyone has that start ugly start. And it's in that start ugly start that it teaches you a lot about yourself, about your business, your structure, and et cetera. So I want you to kind of backtrack. What was your start ugly moment that led you to the measure of success that you see today?
So, you know, I did not know that you're going to ask me this question, but I mean, it is so pertinent to where I am today and why I do what I do, why I have the financial effect. I mean, it has everything to do with that. So I guess you're absolutely right. Except for my start was more, it was start ugly with snot bubbles and tears and just. So what basically happened to me is, you know, I started off as a financial advisor. And one thing you have to know when you're a financial advisor starting off, you are broke. Okay. So you have no money advising people who have money on how they should spend their money when you wish you had some of their money, which is just kind of, you know, weird in itself. And then on top of this, so you're starting a business, and most businesses, when you start off, you don't have a lot of money. That's just kind of the way it is. Then I had a wife and I had a child, and the company I was working with was going through a class action lawsuit. Like a month into me joining them, they got hit with a class action lawsuit, and like people didn't want to work with me. I was having trouble getting clients. It was just a magnificent ugliness that you would ever meet. And I was $30,000 in debt. I was going to owe the IRS about $30,000. And I basically, you know, was just unhappy with the company I was with. I had to, you know, when you start a business, you have a rent fee that I had to pay. I had a household to support. I had a child, and you have all the pressures of the world on your shoulders. You're trying to be a good dad. You're trying to be a good husband. You're trying to be a good coworker. And I felt myself being pulled in all three of these different directions. And essentially, June 22nd, 2009, this thing happened. And I basically said, I am taking care of myself. So like all of a sudden it was a 180. And I essentially basically decided to become the true financial leader in my household. I came home and told my wife, we were upside down on both of our rental properties. This is 2008, or both our home and our rental property. I basically told her, I don't care if we lose the house or lose the other house. If we have to rent, that's just what we do. And she was kind of upset about that. And I gave her the look, I don't care. Then I went into my boss and told him I'm not paying a cent over, I think it was like $2,000 a month, and he was charging me $4,000 a month. Man. I said, I'll work out of a van down by the river and, you know, do financial advising there if you want to charge me more than that, but I'm not paying a cent over $2,000. And I literally basically told the whole world, forget you, and started working on my finances, myself, and my debt. I, within a year, paid off the $30,000. I had money for the IRS. And from that point on, I started making sure that my budget for my business and my family was in line. And then I've been scaling my family life ever since. And that has been the barometer of how I make decisions. And so, therefore, I am here to teach people to basically kind of figure out, okay, when to say no to your spouse. Because, you know, just because I'm the guy and I'm the financial leader, there's many of my clients who the woman is the financial leader and she's the one who has to tell the husband no. So whoever that is, figure it out. Figure out why you're saying no. And the best way to do that is to have a budget. And then when you run your business and you run your family, and you know how much you need to give to your family, it makes it easier to come into a world more confident, more free, and with more space to learn and do more things.
I like that because it's like you had your differentiator line that said, okay, these are the wants, these are the needs, these are the negotiables and the non-negotiables. If you don't like it, then I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I have to set boundaries and I have to have financial goals and make sound decisions for me and my household in order to get to where you want to be. So with all of that back end story, what is your mission for your business? And would you say that it's tied to your passion?
So my mission, I've already kind of done it for my clients. So I feel like I am making the community better by giving my clients the space to be better fathers, husbands, mothers, children, and just better people in the community. I have this feeling that when people finally have a financial freedom to kind of do what they want when they want to and know their boundaries and know where they are, they have the mental capacity and the mental space to explore other things, to get beyond the desk, behind the desk, and really look under the rocks, look under the flowers, look at it, read books, spend time with their children. And I think that is a major, major impact on people's lives. So my goal is really to give you the space to be a better person. And so I feel like I've done that for my clients. My clients are, I think most of them are my raving client fans. And so I started the Financial Effect. There's only one of me. But I started the Financial Effect trying to get people to understand, hey, look, it really just starts with the budget. It really does. If you don't have a budget right now, if you're listening to this, if you don't have a budget and if your spouse does not understand the budget, then you're behind the eight ball. You know, you're behind. You really need to have that budget and really understand how and why you say no. So, for instance, it's caused problems. You may be married to someone who loves to save, loves it. Have $100,000 just sitting in the account, $100,000 just chilling. And you go, hey, we want to go to Disneyland. And they go, that's just too expensive, right? But we have $100,000 in the account. Why can't we take 10 of it and go to Disneyland? That's just too expensive. And so now you have the saver who won't spend, who won't experience life. And it's causing friction between you and that spouse who wants to go to Disneyland because you're sitting on $100,000. And the person who's sitting on $100,000 really can't explain why they have $100,000 sitting in the bank account. They can't explain it. Or if it's $15,000 or $10,000 or whatever, they can't explain why they have it. It just makes them feel good. It makes them feel real nice. And then on the flip side, the spender, if you have $1,000, they don't understand why they shouldn't spend. This is just how life is. I don't know. We got $1,000 just in our savings account. That should be enough. I could die tomorrow is what they'll tell you, right? So what we're trying to do is bring the spender and the saver together to have some logic behind it and really start to see, okay, you know, you are, if you start with a budget, you are ultimately getting what you want, and it will allow you to scale your family up. It's really hard for people to understand because, you know, they think budget means you're going to restrict how much I'm going to spend and I'm not going to be able to live life. And you're going to tell me I can't go to the movies, and you're going to tell me I can't have that licorice. And, you know, when I get through the checkout line and it just stinks. And that is not what I'm doing or not what I'm advocating at all. I'm just trying to get you to understand how much you spend and trying to get you to understand what your ultimate goals are and what's coming down the pipeline. What it is that you're trying to accomplish, and what are the big things that you're trying to accomplish? The things that have meaning in your life, because that licorice means nothing. You're not even going to remember. You're not even going to remember it 2 weeks from now. So, but you are going to remember being able to pay for your daughter's wedding, walking her down the aisle, and being able to not stress about money. You are going to remember that.
Yeah, that's so true, because I remember when my dad walked me down the aisle. So as far as, you know, where you are, I want you to just really grasp a hold of that and think about a time where you had that specific turning point in your business, whether it was a marketing tactic, connections that you met along the way, business decisions that took you from six figures to multiple six figures. And what was it?
So, essentially I got introduced to, early on in my career, probably about 2008, I got introduced to a mentor of mine. So I'm a big advocate of having mentors. There's so many people out there that know things that you don't know and can answer the questions you don't even know to ask. So I got introduced to a guy named Bill Bacharach, who ran a company called Values Based Financial Planning. He still does to this day. And I just remember sitting in front of him, and I remember listening to his one of his CDs. That's how old I am. CDs. And he was like, hey, you know, who here makes $200,000 a year? Who here makes $300,000 a year? Who makes $500,000 a year? And he goes, how would you like to be able to do that in 6 months? Exactly. Yeah, right. I did the same thing. I was like, what? 6 months? What? And so I went to his academies, and I mean, I just dialed in, and he really taught me how to run a financial planning practice that was client-centered, that the clients would appreciate, and will allow me to earn the income that I wanted to earn, have the staff that I needed the staff to provide the service that would be best for everyone, and allow me to scale that up. So I will tell you, I was at a company called First Command Financial Planning prior to, and then I left First Command Financial Planning and went to Cambridge. So, you know, that was one of the hard decisions, because First Command was more of a sales oriented company. They wanted me to sell life insurance. I had quotas and things of that nature. And so they were, you know, were not allowing me to switch to more of a subscription plan, which is where I'm at right now. So now my clients basically pay a subscription plan anywhere between $1,500 to $3,000 a year. As I scale their finances up, my finances get scaled up right with it. The, you know, the better job I do, the better I get paid. And the more client focused we are at getting them to achieve the goals that they want to achieve, that has catapulted me from, I want to say in 2012, we had about 12 million in assets. We now are sitting at 46 million in assets. And I started off with 50 clients, and now I have maybe a little less than 100. And so I have really taught my clients how to save, how to live below their means, and how to get themselves in a situation where when they need money, we can just drop the money in their account for them. If they, you know, I have a lot of clients that, you know, they talk hard about, you know, what college their kid is going to go to and what they're going to pay for. So, oh, all we're going to do is pay for, you know, state university. You know, if they get into Harvard, they're going to have to figure out how to get loans. And then when their kid gets into Harvard, you know, they're blowing snot bubbles and, you know, oh, we got to pay for this. You know, my son just got into Harvard or my daughter just got into Harvard. And so I have ways of, you know, we plan for, you know, state school. But I also have them save in other ways that if they want to send their kids to private school or the Harvard, we can do that. And so I try to add slack in their finances so that they have enough room to do that. And we tell them whether or not they're still on track for their financial goal. So in a way, I've scaled their financial budget up to allow them to do the things that they really want to do.
And that makes sense because you're showing them how to, okay, you may be in a Nissan, but you really want to operate in the BMW, the Bugatti, the Lamborghini, and all of this stuff. But this is what you need to do in order to get out of that Nissan into a bigger vehicle that's more luxurious. But if you're not taking the proper steps to get there along the way, then I'm not going to be able to help you reach your goals. And then it's good that you're planning because sometimes people, they have a certain goal in mind, but if they don't have a mentor or if they don't have a partner or someone to kind of guide them to where they want to be, then it's going to take them a lot longer to get there. And then if you notice, time flies so fast. Before you know it, you're like, dang, we're in 2021. We were just in 2020. Not that I want to repeat 2020 because it was a hell of a year, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
And so it's good that you gave that example because I think there is a listener or multiple listeners out there that need to hear that transparency of how you scaled up your business. And that's why it's called How I Scale Service Podcast, because we want to know, like, what did you do to get to where you are? And another thing that's so important as we're having this dialogue, Armand, is thinking about those things that we did back then that no longer works, and being able to pivot is so important. So what tips would you give someone who is aspiring to start their own business or who may be in business, but they're trying to scale up in their business and bring in more revenue?
So one of the first things I always try to tell people is if you're trying to start your own business, the one thing that's going to drive you out of business is your lack of a budget for your family. So number one, you have to have a budget because, and you need to know how much money your family needs to live. Is it $5,000 a month? Is it $6,000 a month? Because then you need to be clear about how much your business needs to make in order to pay your family the amount of money that they need. Because if it keeps moving, and when I first started in financial advising, it was like, oh, well, but we need this. And, oh, well, but we need that. That was what my spouse was saying to me. Oh, but we need this, right? And it was a constant moving target. Whereas now, even to this day, even though, you know, I have a, you know, 6-7-figure business, I pay my family this amount. It doesn't matter how much extra money I make. This is what you get per month, done. And then I can run my business and put money off to the side for taxes, payroll, hiring marketing people, hiring people for different little things that I come up with. And if you're having a business, absolutely, your spouse should not be involved in the money that your business makes, meaning they can see the money in the account, but they shouldn't touch it at all because that's for the business. I give you money for the family. You manage that for the family. So that's number one. You should have a business checking account, a business savings account. You should figure out on a budget how much you should pay your family per month, $5,000 a month, $6,000 a month, $3,000 a month. I don't care what the number it is. And that's what they get. And then you figure out, you know, if they go over budget, they need to slow down their spending to get that paid down. Don't go creeping over the bank wall looking at how much money I don't care if I have $100,000 sitting in my business account. Don't look in the bank wall trying to say, well, you can pay the credit card off if you wanted to. That's for the business. Now, you may decide you may need to pay the family a little bit more, and that's a logical discussion between you and your spouse and the expenses and going through it. And that's what we're trying to do, make sure that this is a logical discussion. And then secondly, as far as, you know, what took my business to the next level, an executive assistant. I call in my business called directors of client services or DCSs. I'm a big believer in bandwidth. And I know probably a lot of people listening to this may not know what I mean, but I believe that most people have a certain amount of bandwidth, meaning, and again, this is why I try to get people's finances off their bandwidth. Like, you want to set your finances as automatic so that you don't have to think about it as much as possible. And so you want to have more space for things for you to think about. So if you are running a business and there are things that you literally can delegate it so that you think about other things that you need to be thinking about, and you would be amazed at how much you grow after that. If you have someone who's, you know, one of the things that we pride ourselves on is we are a concierge services to your finances. I want to take care of everything that has a dollar sign on it. I'm a Superman, but I am not that super. And so I have to have a team of people with actual direction. And we have a guideline thing so that they know exactly how I want it done. It's 48 pages long of all the things that they're supposed to be doing and how they're doing it and things of that nature. And I know how it's supposed to be done that they follow. And so now that I'm able to delegate, it allows me to think about other things that I want to do so that I can possibly scale my business up, or things that we should be doing for our clients. Or as I'm looking at the paperwork, I can really just think about where their investments should be, or really talk to them about their budget and really dig deep into their goals and their dreams and their realities and really have a conversation. I'm not flustered. I'm not in a bad mood when I'm talking to them. It just makes me a better financial advisor. And so if you can hire, and I hire a virtual assistant, but if you can hire an executive assistant and you can be clear about where you want to go in your business, don't just say, hey, I want to make six figures. How? And is there anyone out there that is doing it, that is in your business, that you can go grab coffee with that can kind of give you an idea of what that looks like and how much work it is? Because to be honest with you, I did not get here without somebody holding my hand. So I got here, someone's holding my hand, and now, you know, I'm looking to hold other people's hands and kind of give back.
And that's beautiful, because it sounds like you have to know what your budget is, stick to your budget, make sure whatever budget you set, it does not fluctuate unless there's a conversation and both parties are in agreement. Then you have to know what your playbook is, because it sounds like you have a massive playbook, 48 pages for your team. But then also one thing that kind of stood out, you said you have a team of people that work for you. But one thing I would advise people that are just starting out in business, if they don't have the capital to outsource, then they should kind of wait and do it themselves until they have enough money to outsource to someone else. Would you agree?
I would agree with that. And I would caveat that with, you know, first of all, you need to figure out how much it would cost for you to pay for that someone. And then I'm always the type of person to say to them, before you make that expense, practice doing it first. So let's say you want to hire someone and it's going to cost, and I'm making up numbers, $1,500 per month. Put $1,500 a month out of your business into savings and see how that feels. And if you can do it with 6 months and not touch that $1,500, then you're ready to hire someone. And then if you're doing it yourself, then you know the job. That executive assistant probably will do it better than you, but at least you know what they're going through and how many hours it takes, and keep track of how many hours it takes you to do that specific job. But yes, before you hire someone, practice paying them first. And if you're finding yourself dipping into savings, trying to pay your imaginary assistant, you probably shouldn't do it.
Great tips. And any last words as we begin to wind down?
Ooh, Any last words? I mean, I you know, like I said before, you budget so that you can be a better person for your family. You know, I have rules as far as rules of engagement. You know, I have like five like questions you should ask yourself if you're going to make a purchase. Number one, if you're in debt, don't make the purchase. You know, get yourself out of debt. Then the next question you have to ask yourselves is, can you afford this? And so that kind of goes in line of practice before you do it. So if you want to buy the Tesla, that's fine. The Tesla is $700 a month. Why don't you practice paying $700 a month to yourself first and before you buy the Tesla? I know you can't wait, but you should wait and see how that's going to impact the family. Then you want to ask yourself, is this a need or a want? A Tesla is not a need. It will never be a need. It's a want. It's not a need. A car is a want. You can get one for $15,000. So if you want a car, you can get a cheap car that won't impact your family. And then number four, of course, does this goal or this want that you have positively impact the family? Here's a newsflash. Your kids do not care that you're driving a Tesla. They don't care. It doesn't matter to them. So you buying a Tesla does not positively impact the family. This is all about you. And I'm not saying it shouldn't be about you sometimes. I'm just saying that it doesn't positively impact the family. And then lastly, does this goal cause any constraints on the family budget? You know, again, that's why you practice. Can your family still go to the movies? Can they go out to eat the way they want to? If, you know, your daughter needs braces, are you able to, you know, pay it without it being you being mad at your daughter for having crooked teeth? Because, you know, there's some parents out there. Why did you have to have crooked teeth? I told you not to eat them nuts. You know, just because crazy. So you need to make sure that you're not as stressed, that you're not blaming your kids, because you have people who blame their kids because for not having money. It's not your kid's fault. It's your fault. You need to make the decisions and ask yourself these questions before you make any major purchases. And that's what I would leave you with is, you know, I always have this saying, put your family first by putting your money first. Put your money first. And not in a selfish, I'm just going to hoard it all, but in a way so that, you know, when your family needs something, you have it. You have it to give to them. And so that's how you should try to run your family business and your family practice. The same with your business. Put your money first, then sit there and scale your business up when it feels comfortable to do it. But practice first.
Those are really great tips. And I want you to tell the listeners one more time the name of your business, how they could connect with you on social media, and your email address. So in case somebody needs you to be their mentor, as you said, you believe in giving back and you want some hands to hold.
No problem. So you can find me at croomfinancial.com. I'm also on the financialeffect.com that on Facebook. You can also find me on the Financial Effect and on Instagram at the Financial Effect. And then my email address is Armond, that's A-R-M-O-N-D, at croomfinancial.com.
And that's Croom, y'all, with a C, C-R-O-O-M, financial. Yes. So thank you so much, Armond, for being on How I Scale Service podcast. Once again, y'all, I'm the host, Genesis Amaris Kemp, and it has been a pleasure. Please stand by.
Caitlin here. Thank you so much for listening to the How I Scaled Service podcast. If you're a business owner who has successfully scaled their business to multiple six figures or more, and you would like to be on this program, visit risingranksdigital.com/apply. And if you got something out of this interview, I would love for you to share it with your network. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on your social channels. If you know someone that would be a great guest, make sure to tag them to let them know about the show and include the hashtag #HowIScaledService. I love seeing your posts and your guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and truly mean a lot to my team and me. Want to stay in our world? go to our website, risingranksdigital.com, or follow me on LinkedIn at Caitlin Strumpel, Facebook at Rising Ranks Digital, and Instagram at Caitlin Strumpel. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next time.